You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Gilliver.
Susie Hunt.
And we have a guest joining us today.
Eric Butel.
Thank you for joining us once again, Eric. Always a pleasure to have you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you guys again.
Ah, no problem. And this is episode 68. It's our last of the Halloween horror movies. This is Rob Zombie's 31. Came out in 2016. It's an hour and 42 minutes. Obviously, we already said directed by Rob Zombie. I'm not going to go through his credits because we already did this month. but I just have in my notes, we know. So we already know his credits. But this is a rather controversial flick, which I'm sure we will get into. But before that, let's go around the table. Eric, as you are our guest, we will start with you. What'd you think of this flick?
I like it. I like it a lot. I almost wish you wouldn't have picked me first.
sorry.
No, when you said you were going to do the Rob Zombies and I kind of jumped all over it, I was like, yes, I've been really reevaluating how I look at his films, and it really hit me. I think when I saw House of a Thousand Corpses, like, I was really stumped when I rewatched that. And I think it has a lot to do with how I remember his films, because I'm like, I don't really rewatch them that much, probably because sometimes I, you know, they're tough watches, some of them.
Yeah.
Like this one. But this one I like a lot. I like the grindhouse aspect. Like, I remember hearing about this. Like, he had said it, I want to say, like, around House of a Thousand Corpses or Devil Rejects, where he mentioned some, like, killer clown movie, like a funhouse, like, type scenario, Running Man, the most dangerous game, but with, like, a bunch of, like, circus people trying to kill them or something, a while ago. And then I heard that this movie was coming out. So I feel like he had this in the drawer for a while. I like it because I do like that grindhouse vibe and, like, plotting style, but then I also like the characters a lot as well. Mm-hmm. And I know he always identifies, like, well, not always, but, like, you know, he writes the cool lines for the, you know, a lot of the killers. But in this one, I felt like the carny group, the non-murderous ones, are, like, I don't know, they have just as much, like, cool things to say, I thought, at least. And I feel like, you know, again, he just drew on some great characters and stuff. And for me, I know the movie begins with, like, a Nietzsche quote, and we can get into that. But my interpretation of it is actually kind of hopeful. Like, it's very much about decisions. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in a lot of his movies, like, this was the first one where, like, people kind of fight back, like, even if it's completely, like, they're going to be DOA, like, but I don't know, I like that. I feel like there's always a decision to make instead of, and there's a certain, like, nihilism mm-hmm. versus hope, and I don't know, but I like that.
Well, I think that's extremely prevalent with Charlie's character.
Yeah.
Which, you know, obviously we'll get to, but that whole idea of making the choice to fight back. And I think that shows really strongly with her. But no, I agree. I fucking love this movie. But Susie, I know you're a big Rob Zombie fan. So what do you think about this?
I really love this movie from the very first, from the prologue. It's just, you know, you're in for a ride. Like, from the get-go, that opening, it doesn't leave. It tells you what you're getting into, and then you see it.
Yep.
And oh my God. So when this movie came out, the Transit Regal did, like, a one- or two-night showing. I bought the tickets online and then told Shane, hey, we're going to this. So we went, and, you know, he supports my interests. So we watched the movie, loved it. He's sitting there the whole time. We're walking to the car, and I'm like, oh, my God, that was so great. It was intense. Like, the movie doesn't stop. Like, from the beginning to when they get abducted, or the beginning tells you how, what's going down. And then from the minute they get abducted and you meet the, I call it the powdered wing gang, the powdered wig gang, it's just nonstop, one punch in the gut after the other. Yeah. And like, you're rooting for these characters, but you know that they're not going to make it. So we're walking to the car and I'm going on about how much I loved it. And Shane goes, you mean the murder porn we just watched? And I was like, okay, all right, fair enough.
It definitely is an acquired taste. I'll give him that.
I could not watch this. I mean, I can watch Lords of Salem. I can watch House of a Thousand Corpses, like the Firefly trilogy. I can watch that, but this movie, I can't watch it the same amount that I watch his others, just because it's so intense. And he said himself, this is the most gruesome movie he's shot.
Yeah. It is. It definitely is. But Reese, what do you think about this?
I like the movie a lot. It's actually one of my favorite ones by him.
Yes, same.
And I don't have any problems watching. I just watched it a couple weeks ago because honestly, I didn't think two Rob Zombie movies would get voted in.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured House of a Thousand Corpses was a shoo-in. I wasn't so sure about this one because it is an acquired taste.
Right.
But so I did watch it again a couple weeks ago and I watched it again yesterday. So I have no problems watching it. It's not Last House on the Left.
No, that's
no, definitely not.
You could watch that once and be like, okay.
Yeah, I don't need to see that again.
Right. But no, I love it. The grindhouse style is, you know, I love it. It's campy at some points, but the terror is real. And Richard Brake is awesome. He starts off the movie and he ends the movie and he's just fucking fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I thought the cast was good, and you know, Sherry Moon Zombie doesn't get a lot of credit, but for being a quote unquote non-actress, I think she's gotten a lot better.
Oh, hell yeah. I think she's great in
the movie she's done.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I agree. So, but the other casts were great. With their fake Jamaican accents.
Oh, I love Panda. He's awesome.
Yeah.
But I just enjoy it, and I usually watch it around this time every year, you know, since it's come out. So,
yeah. Honestly, I'm going to echo a lot of what you guys have said. And one of the things I always find so funny when I hear people say that they don't like this movie or that they think it's like the weakest of his films, I'm always surprised because I'm like, it's my second favorite. Like, Devil's Rejects takes the cake for me. That's number one. I fucking love that movie. I feel like it's his masterpiece. But this is exactly what I wanted it to be. And it's funny, when he was doing the crowdfunding, and that's one something we should mention, a lot of people immediately disliked this film based on how it got made. There wasn't an interest. And at this point, Rob Zombie wasn't the big moneymaker that he was around the time Halloween came out. Because it was like House of a Thousand Corpses kind of put him on the map, became an instant cult classic. Devil's Rejects blew everybody away. So, you know, he was given Halloween, and again, it was very controversial. Like, people were like, well, I didn't like what he did with the character, and, you know, it was a remake, so it was easily hated by a lot of people. So it was very split. Then when Halloween 2 came out, he lost even more people. So by that time, it was hard for him to get proper funding for, like, a wide-release film. So we saw what happened with Lords of Salem, where it was, like, limited screens, and that was the first time that it happened with his stuff. 31 obviously was the second time, but by that point he was looking into crowdfunding. And I know a lot of people were really pissed about that. They're like, how can this rich guy, and I'm like, it's not like he's super rich, but you know, whatever, but how can this famous director crowdfund something? And it's like, well, because he wants to bring you the movie that he has a vision for, and studios aren't interested in it. When he first talked about it, he didn't pull any punches. He was like, look, it's like Eric said, it's Running Man, The Dangerous Game. It's that Most Dangerous Game. It's one of those ideas where it's a horror version with clowns. And that's exactly what I expected. I expected this murder game that he talked about in the synopsis, and he delivered exactly what he promised. And everybody who seemed to like the idea hated the result. That always confused me. Because I'm like, how could you like the idea, then get exactly what you were promised and go, that was garbage? Like, I don't understand. But I fucking adore this movie. It pulls no punches. It just goes, you know, it doesn't try to be anything that it's not. It's like, hey, we're going to show you a crazy murder game. Go. Like, that's all it is. But the characters are so fucking good. The villains are just super crazy. All of the carny folk are good guys. They're all interesting and unique characters in and of themselves. It just, and like you said, even they had great dialogue. And usually it is like the Captain Spaulding, or in this case, the Doomhead character who has the best dialogue. But even the carnies had some great one-liners. So I just love it.
Yeah, it's weird watching this back to back. Well, not back to back, but the last two Rob Zombie movies I watched was House of a Thousand Corpses and this. And this is very much like almost the same plot. Like, yeah. To me, it's like a bunch of people, and they even use like the scarecrow type jump out trap to get the carnies. I have to think of a better word than carnies, like hippies or rock stars or roadies or something. That's the whole feel of them.
Well, they were carnival folk.
Yeah, it was very much like the same type of thing. And just watching the execution between like House of a Thousand Corpses and then this storytelling, I thought it was just leaps and bounds ahead of it.
Oh yeah, big time. But so we'll go through the cast. And like I said, in House of a Thousand Corpses, a Rob Zombie movie usually has a crazy big cast. So we're starting it off with Charlie, played by Sherry Moon Zombie. Of course, all of Rob Zombie stuff she's in. We already know that. Roscoe Pepper, played by Jeff Daniel Phillips, who is awesome. He was in Halloween 2, Lords of Salem, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Westworld, The Gifted, Satanic Panic, and of course, Three from Hell. He's also one of the Geico cavemen. If anyone remembers those commercials.
Yeah.
Then we have Panda Thomas, played by Lawrence Hilton Jacobs. He was in Death Wish, Roots, Welcome Back Kotter, Alien Nation, Martin, Roseanne. He was in a lot of great stuff. Let's see. Venus Virgo, played by Meg Foster. Masters of the Universe. Come on, she was Evil Lynn. She was in They Live, Leviathan, Quantum Leap, ER. She's one of our Murder, She Wrote alums. She's also in Lords of Salem and, of course, Twin Peaks. Then we have Levon Wally, played by Kevin Jackson. He was in that Leslie Nielsen movie, Spy Hard, if anyone remembers that.
Of course.
Spider-Man, ER, Criminal Minds, and Three from Hell. Then we have Father Murder, played by Malcolm McDowell. Of course, our big star of the film. This guy is in everything. But just to name a few, obviously, Clockwork Orange, Caligula, Class of 1999. He's in one of the funniest Tales from the Crypt episodes, The Reluctant Vampire, where he plays a vampire that works. He's a security guard that's a vampire working at a blood bank. Fantastic episode. Then he was in Tank Girl. He did voices for Captain Planet, South Park, Metalocalypse, Fallout 3, Robot Chicken. The guy's all over the place. Then we have Sister Serpent, played by Jane Carr. She was in Doctor Who, Boy Meets World, Babylon 5, Beverly Hills 90210, and then recently DC's Legends of Tomorrow. Then we have Sister Dragon, played by Judy Geeson, another Murder, She Wrote alum. We have she was also in MacGyver, Monsters, Sherman Oaks, which I don't know if anyone remembers, but it was a really fucking funny Showtime show back in the early 90s. But a like a plastic surgeon and his fucked up family. It was like a the first kind of mockumentary thing I ever saw. Really funny show. Then she was also in Lords of Salem. Then, of course, Doomhead, as we mentioned, Richard Brake. This guy, I have, like, he's quickly becoming one of my favorite actors. Everything he is in, he's fucking awesome. He was in Batman Begins. He was in Doom. He's actually one of the best parts about the Doom movie. The Black Dahlia.
He's the Night King.
Yep, he's the Night King in Game of Thrones. He was in Supernatural. He's in Thor the Dark World, Halloween 2, Hannibal Rising, Mandy, that Nicolas Cage movie. And then, of course, Three from Hell. He's, was it the Midnight Wolfman? Was that what they called him? I forget his name in that. I think it was the Midnight Wolfman.
I have no idea what his name was. He was his brother or cousin or something, right?
Yeah, he was a half-brother to Otis.
Yeah, Winslow Foxworth Coltrane.
Didn't they call him the Midnight Wolfman or something? I feel
that
like...
Dad, I don't remember.
Is this Kentucky with the... with the brother cousin stuff?
I'm like, I should remember because I literally just watched it like 2 weeks ago. But then he's also in the newest Tremors. Tremors Part 7. I can't believe they made 7 of those. Shrieker Island. That just came out.
I just saw him on the Netflix thing. It shows him holding like a Gatling gun. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to watch it. But I did notice him on it.
I actually do want to kind of want to watch. I need to watch Part 6 first because I haven't seen that one yet. But I've seen the first 5 and I have enjoyed myself in every Tremors movie. Like, they're dumb, but they're fun.
Was there a show or am I imagining? There was a show, but did it just not last?
I think there was.
Yeah, I think there was.
I don't think it lasted.
Not surprising.
Right. Then we have Sickhead, played by Pancho Moeller. He was in All That, American Horror Story, Ray Donovan, American Fright Fest, Candy Corn, and Three from Hell. Then Schizohead, played by David Urie. He was in Charmed, Heroes, Breaking Bad, American Horror Story, Walking Dead, Three from Hell, and Birds of Prey, and The Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn, which, fantastic movie. I know a lot of people were torn on that one, but I loved it. Then we got Psychohead, played by Lou Temple, who I love. He was in The Devil's Rejects, Texas Chainsaw Massacre at the Beginning, my most loathed of the Chainsaw movies. Halloween, Trailer Park of Terror, House, Susie, you remember that movie.
Yep.
Oh, God, it's so bad.
Yep.
From 2008. House? Yes. Not the good 80s one. There was one that came out in 2008 called House. It had Lou Temple in it, but it also had...
God, he was in, I can Michael picture Madsen. Him. Yes.
Yes. I was like, I couldn't think, I wanted to say,
Reservoir that. Dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. And then wasn't Bill Moseley in it as well? I feel like Bill Moseley was in it, but I don't remember that.
I mean, he could have been.
It's such a bad movie.
But, is it, what's it about? It's not like a remake of the 80s one or the Japanese House movie,
no.
Right?
No, there's like Michael Madsen plays like this killer called the Tin Man. And there's like, I want to say the house was haunted. I just remember it being a clusterfuck of bad edits. Like, it was very hard to follow what was going on. But
Bill Moseley was in that movie.
Okay. Because I remember being tricked by the cast being like, oh, there's some good people in this.
I know, but it was just awful. It was garbage.
Oh, so bad. But that was like the first movie I had watched that made me angry. I'm like, this is not okay. It should not be this bad. But he was also, Lou Temple was also in The Walking Dead, played a great role in that. And then we have Deathhead, played by Torsten Voges. He's in Seinfeld, The Big Lebowski. He's one of the nihilists in The Big Lebowski. He's in 8mm, Lords of Salem, and Grimm. And then we have Sexhead, played by E.G. Daly. She was in Valley Girl, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Better Off Dead, Loverboy. And then, of course, she does voices for a bunch of our favorite shows from the 90s. Darkwing Duck, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Rugrats, Rocko's Modern Life, Gargoyles, Duckman, the Powerpuff Girls. And then, of course, she was also in The Devil's Rejects. But this fucked with me because seeing her act, you know, all
like
horny.
Like a prostitute. And then
yeah. I could hear Tommy Pickles.
Tommy Pickles and Dee Dee.
I didn't like it.
I didn't want to see her boobies.
Right. And then we have Fat Randy, played by Michael Alcott. The only thing that he has that I recognized was the Devil's Rejects. He's the chicken fucker.
Right.
He's like, now you boys ain't gonna fuck these chickens now, are you? Oh, I love that scene. And then we have Snoopy, played by Esperanza America. This is the only thing I saw for her. And Trixie, played by Andrea Dora. This is, again, the only thing I saw for her. And the last few, we have Lucky Leo, played by Tracy Walter. Conan the Destroyer, Elf, Batman, Alien Nation, Freddy's Nightmare, Silence of the Lambs. Guy's in a ton of shit. Pastor Victor, played by Daniel Roebuck. Again, another guy that's in a bunch of stuff. He's in Star Trek The Next Generation, Quantum Leap, Final Destination, Bubba Hotep, which I want to get on this show one day, Law and Order, Bones, Halloween 2, Lords of Salem, and most recently, Three from Hell and Phantasm Ravager, the final Phantasm movie.
Hmm.
Then we have Georgina, played by Devin Siddell, Malcolm in the Middle, Parks and Rec, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and she did voices for The Last of Us Part 2, which, fantastic video game if you guys haven't played it. And then last but not least, we have Cherry Bomb, played by Ginger Lynn, whose only credit that I will read is The Devil's Rejects.
You can say Torn.
Okay, yeah, but some of those other titles, oh boy. So,
like the Pleasure Hunt?
Yeah. But she was the lady getting screwed by Spaulding in Devil's Rejects and the lady getting screwed by Doomhead in this one. So... That's always fun. But so the basic plot for anyone who hasn't watched this is five carnival workers are kidnapped and held hostage in an abandoned compound known as Murder World. They're forced to participate in a violent game, in the violent game of 31, the goal of which is to survive for 12 hours against a gang of sadistic clowns. So it's basically a more horrific version of The Running Man. So... Very interesting concept, but we open up with a quote from Kefka. It says, the first sign of the beginning of understanding is the wish to die. So it kind of sets things up right there. Now, I was going to read this entire thing, but instead of reading it out because it would take too damn long, I'll just explain it. The opening, it's all in black and white. We see a first person shot of a doorway at the end of like a creepy, dilapidated hall. It opens up, a figure slowly walks into frame and starts talking directly to the camera. This is our first introduction to Doomhead, who is by far the coolest character in this movie. Now, I'll post, as Susie suggested this before we started, I will post a clip on the Facebook page of this speech, because even if you've never seen this movie, you should watch this speech. It's so... fucking insane, and it sets up it just sets the movie up perfectly. He's talking to somebody, and we reveal he's talking to a pastor who is tied to a chair, and he's basically talking about how he's going to kill him. And slowly, as he goes through his little speech, the pastor starts begging for his life and asks what they've done with his wife, his beautiful wife Georgina. And he tells him that two little clowns he knows took a liking to her and that she'll be sticking around for a while. And then the pastor starts praying and Doomhead gets pissed off, takes his axe, runs his finger across it, tells him that he should apologize for not sharpening it. It might take a few extra whacks. And then he starts hacking him in the gut. And dead pastor, Doomhead smiles, walks away, door closes. You know, then we get the opening credits and it was just, whoo boy, like what a fucking opening.
But just to give like a snippet of the monologue at the very end, before he like takes the axe to his belly, he goes, you know what they say, Kemosabe? In hell, everybody loves popcorn. And just the way the black and white is so effective, because it just looks dirtier than it is, and the makeup just looks caked on him.
Yes. Yeah. And again, Richard Brake, he's so fucking good as this villain. And like he's terrifying. Like right from the get-go, you're scared of this guy, you know? And I loved it. I was like, I think he's my next favorite zombie character up to Captain Spaulding. Like, I think he's right behind Spaulding, but yeah. So we cut to, the opening credits, like I said, we hear Walk Away by Joe Walsh. Zombie always has great soundtracks, as we've discussed in the past. And we see kind of a montage of home video of like a road trip. And we're seeing the different main characters at different stops while the song plays. And then finally it says October 31st, 1976. And we meet our main cast packed inside of an RV driving along a backwood country road. And up front we meet Charlie, Panda, and Fat Randy. And they're arguing about the shitty RV and whether or not it's running on empty. And in the back is Roscoe, Venus, and Snoopy. And Roscoe is trying to convince Venus that he thinks it's time to bring back their girly gorilla gag. Where they turn a girl into a gorilla. And Snoopy gets all excited and goes, "Oh, you have a gorilla?" And he goes, "Yeah, he's in my pants. I call him King Dong." And she goes to grab his dick. And he goes, "Get the fuck away from me." Like, he spazzes out.
He's like, "Will you give me 2 fucking seconds?
I love Roscoe's deliveries. He's always, like, shocked and afraid.
Yeah.
I love it. But, so Venus basically disagrees with him and tells him that, you know, it ain't gonna work, that gag is tired, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, "I don't want to be a mechanic all my life. Do you think I want to," or he says something like, "I don't want to be a mechanic all my life. I have dreams, and part of it isn't ripping young kids' arms out of the mangled machinery."
A mangled tilt-a-whirl.
Yeah, that's what it was. And she goes, "I got dreams too, baby. You go for it." And that's, again, he shoves her. He's like, "Get the fuck off of me." Like, he just keeps freaking out every time Snoopy touches him.
I feel like even though this takes place in the year, it was 76.
Yeah.
These were like Dazed and Confused characters. Like, if none of those kids from Dazed and Confused kept going to school. Like, that's what these people are.
They would end up as this cast. That's actually pretty accurate.
And it was just, and they seemed like very, like, blue collar, like, relatable too.
Oh, yeah. And then, so back up front, Panda asks Charlie what she thinks of the talent back there, pointing to Snoopy. And he goes, "You know, the one with the lopsided high beams." And then Charlie goes, "Oh, don't worry, she'll twitch and itch her way all across the midway, just like all the good babies do." And he goes, "That's what I'm worried about, a new wave of crabs coming in." It's just like, that's pretty fucked up. But then we get in the back, Venus and Roscoe talking more about the gorilla act. And he said that, he's like, "Here, let me go back and get the gorilla costume." So he goes to the back of the RV.
Oh my God.
And he busts in, and there's Levon fucking around with Trixie.
He's like licking her butt cheek.
I know. And of course I wrote, "That's our first dem titties."
That's how they did that in the 70s.
They licked the butt cheeks.
They licked the butt cheeks in the 70s.
Simpler times.
Exactly.
Very simpler.
But I love it because Levon freaks out. He's like, "Damn it, boy, can't you see what I'm doing back here?" And Roscoe just doesn't even care. He goes in, gets his mask, and then he puts it on and starts, like, air humping and gets Trixie all excited.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Eric.
Oh. No, I was just going to say, that's the sign that you've been living with people too long, or for a long time.
Right.
That you would just walk in on them while they're in the bathroom or something like that.
No cares given.
Yeah.
You forgot about the frosting.
I was going to say.
Because Trixie's like, "Who got the cake?"
Yeah. No. So, and Levon. Go ahead.
He tells a story about a boy who hears, was it his grandparents?
Grandparents, yep.
Grandparents having sex. And when he asks them about it, they say that they were baking a cake. And then he asks a few days later, Grandma, if her and Grandpa baked a cake last night. And she said, "Why, yes, how did you know?" And he says, "Why, I licked the frosting off the couch."
And she's like, "I don't get it." He goes,
"It's cum. It's his cum.
It's the old man's jizz." And she goes, "Oh, I get it." Oh, it's fucking gross.
Her and Snoopy are the I like cheese characters in this movie.
Yeah, oh, big time. So yeah, so after he gets out of the back, he shows the mask to Venus, and he's like, see, look, it's still Boss. And she goes, okay, I'll think about it. And then we cut to them, we cut outside, we see an old beat up billboard that says, prepare to meet thy God. And I wrote, this is very House of a Thousand Corpses, with the whole billboard, God is dead, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we see them pull into like this dusty old gas station, and Panda calls out to the attendant. I love this back and forth. He goes, hey, oldie, got any gas today? And he goes, it's a cocksucking gas station, ain't it? He goes, all right, then fill this big bitch up pronto. And he goes, any of you dumb cunts in this ridiculous machine know how to read, or are you still using sign language? And he flips Panda off. And he goes, hey, old man, I know how to read. He goes, then read it and weep, genius. And he holds up a sign that says Lucky Leo's self-service, but service is spelled S-E-R-V-I-S-E.
I mean, that says, it speaks volumes as to
to who Lucky Leo is.
He's just so fucking disgusting.
Oh, yeah, he's this crusty old man. But I love it.
He's my favorite character.
He's definitely gotten, like, some Famunda cheese going on, probably.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely got, he's crusty.
I don't want to know what that is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there.
It ain't good. So Charlie comes out and kind of riles Leo up. He's like telling her, what did he say? He goes, I got a mattress and some gut burner out back.
Right. He's like, they yep. call me Lucky Leo.
And she's like, oh, I bet they did. She grabs his crotch and goes, your old ticker couldn't survive the ride. He just starts going, like moaning. And then Roscoe, you know, tells her to stop screwing with the locals. And she goes, I'm just making friends. And she smacks her ass and saunters off. And then Roscoe goes, you've had enough friends for a lifetime. It's like, ouch. He's kind of a dick. But Charlie goes over and we see this weird, like, carnival marionette display, which will come into play later.
Chekhov's marionette.
Right.
Display.
And then she teases Leo about playing with puppets and goes into the bathroom. And then
all right. I have a question. Okay. Why are two grown-ass men in a single-serve bathroom and the one is shitting?
Right.
1970s. It was simpler times.
No, I'm sorry. You do not go in the bathroom. I've shared stalls at bars before with my girlfriends. That's one thing, but I'm not taking a dump while they're holding the door shut for me. I'm looking at you, the pink.
Oh my God.
Pink. Yep. Blast from the past.
Yeah, I think once again, yeah, that scene, when I was watching it again, I'm like, oh yeah, it's, yeah. I don't
and
know.
You can
again,
hear it.
It's
yeah.
Plopping.
Oh yeah.
He's grunting and plopping.
Ooh, baby.
Well, at least if someone in there, he probably wiped.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
He did have no the toilet paper. Yes. But right.
So there was no mud butt.
Right before that, there's this little bit of physical comedy with Lucky Leo that cracked me the fuck up. Because, like, right before the scene transition, he grabs his dick and starts walking stiff-legged away. Like, he looks like he's got two wooden legs. He's going, ah, ah, and he's, like, kind of moaning. Cracked me the fuck up when I saw it.
He probably hasn't had an erection in a really long time.
He's like, I don't know how to do this anymore.
Is it broken?
But then, as you said, we cut to Panda and Levon in the bathroom. Panda's dropping a load, and I love it because he's, once again, he's singing on the shitter. We see this a lot in horror movies. When people have to take a shit, they sing. It's like they're coaxing it out. But meanwhile, Levon's just staring at himself in the mirror, bitching about going bald and saying he can't pull no Isaac Hayes. But so then we cut outside to Venus talking to Trixie and Snoopy.
Oh my God, this part is disgusting to me too.
You want to tell him?
Oh, no, I can't.
So they're asking Venus if there's anything she can teach them about the business. And she goes, there's only one thing you need to know. She goes, sucky, 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 mm-hmm. fucky, 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 then spreads her legs and waves her hand across her vagina and says, juicy, juicy, juicy.
That's just wrong.
Money, money, money. That's a slogan to live by. Man or woman.
Oh, that's great. Oh, man. So then we cut to Fat Randy cleaning the windows while Roski fills up the RV. And
did
Tommy,
you just call him Roski?
Roscoe, I meant.
He's a Roski.
It was almost like you were trying to say, like, Rastafarian, but it came out Roski.
I think it was because I said Fat Randy first. I saw the E in my... So Fat Randy and Roski. But Roscoe's filling up the RV, and suddenly Tommy Pickles comes walking up and starts asking questions.
Do you notice how, like, ill-proportioned her clothes are? Maybe ill-proportioned isn't a good way to explain it. But, like, the front of her shorts are, like, so super low. But the back of her shorts are, it looks like it's almost up to the, like, to her collarbone. I'm exaggerating, but...
Yeah, they were cut at an odd angle.
Maybe people didn't really know how to sew in the 70s.
That was the 70s style.
They just wore scraps.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing I was an 80s kid.
So she starts flirting with Roscoe, and she's asking all sorts of questions, like, how many people are in the van? You know, are you going hunting? And he's like, oh, no, we're just driving through. And she goes, oh, going to go do some hunting? She keeps bringing up hunting. And he goes, why do you keep wanting to know if we're going hunting? And she goes, oh, I don't know. You just give off that great white hunter vibe. And then she goes, do you guys got any weapons? And he goes, just an old shotgun. She goes, oh, what's that for? And he said, propping open the air vent. And he starts laughing. And she looks confused for a second and then clearly forces a laugh. And she goes, well, what are you going to do if you get in a jam? And he pulls out his arms and starts flexing. Goes, well, I'll just have to pull out my guns. And she calls him Popeye. Pops him one and says, I'm going to go eat my spinach, Popeye, and she walks away. Mm-hmm. So she was doing some recon.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, not in this scene. I was just thinking about the character of Roscoe, who I think is like a Rob Zombie simulacra or something. Like, yep. It is kind of like Rob Zombie in the movie.
Right.
Just, I don't know, his appearance and everything, but, like Lords of Salem, I felt like Roscoe and Charlie in this were like the characters from Lords of Salem in certain respects, like in the Vegas, because I felt like, just thinking back, like when she showed up at the gas station and was like, you know, molesting the old man, they had that little exchange and Roscoe did not take kindly to that. Like, I think he said something like, you have like enough friends, or you had enough friends for a while,
for a lifetime.
Yeah.
And like, that was like, I'm like, oh, he's definitely like in love with, or he likes her at least.
Oh yeah.
Which is more evident towards the end of the film. But I was like, oh, there's that weird sense of longing. And then I remember that was in Lords of Salem and that sort of alienation too, but or right. of something that is never going to come to fruition. So, but it's much like his gorilla idea and how he thinks he can be with total strangers and, I don't know, showing off his guns or whatever he thinks they are.
Right.
whatever he thinks they are.
But yeah, I mean, and that is very true. Like they do play a similar role where it's like Sherry Moon plays the completely disinterested friend, and Jeff Daniel Phillips plays like the ducky, if you will. Like, he's constantly longing for. But yeah, I mean, it's the same in this flick too. But yeah, I definitely get that vibe. I do hope we get Lords of Salem on here one of these days. I know we all really like it.
I mean, unless Jesus calls me home, I will be having another birthday next year, so we'll see.
This is true. I think I have mine picked out, but we'll see when we get closer to my birthday. But anyway, so Roscoe is dumb enough to think she was flirting with him. And, you know, she, like I said, she walks off. And we cut to the group driving away that evening. And we see, like, they're driving along listening. I forget, was it Wolfman Jack? There was some kind of radio show they were listening to. And we see the various characters in the RV kind of passed out here and there. And they come upon a bunch of scarecrows in the road. So they stop the van. Roscoe, Snoopy, and Panda get out to go move the scarecrows. Upon closer inspection, Panda is really creeped out, saying, "This is some voodoo." And I love it because Roscoe goes, "Voodoo, schmoodoo, let's just move this stuff." And out of nowhere, a bunch of fucking goons come running up, stab and kill Snoopy, beat the shit out of Panda and Roscoe, and before the others in the RV can realize what's going on, they jump into the RV and take it over. So we cut to the goons now driving the RV away, and we see Snoopy, Trixie, and Fat Brandy are all dead, and the others are bound and gagged. So it was just like, holy shit, like that happened really quick. And one little thing is the look of the goons. I love it because I didn't recognize this right away until I was listening to the commentary track.
Is it a Christmas story?
Yes, he modeled them after the Christmas story.
Yeah.
I didn't recognize it my first watch. And then when I heard the commentary, I'm like, holy shit, they totally are. I was like, that's such a fun idea.
Yeah, I think it's keeping like with that black and white sort of like film ghoul aesthetic he had at the beginning when Doomhead and
that
thing was going on.
It also seems to fit his vibe of like taking something, taking something that is seemingly normal or beloved and kind of turning it on its ear. Like you see that with a lot of like Halloween decorations in his movies. Like there's the super simplistic like dime store pharmacy style Halloween decorations that you'd hang in your window, but he's juxtaposing that with like blood and gore. So now you're seeing this beloved childhood item next to some horrific shit. And with the Christmas story, it's like everybody loves the fucking Christmas story. And then it's like now they're murdering people. So I think that's just a Rob Zombie thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But so, yeah, we cut to a huge, like fancy ballroom looking thing. And the group is now all chained up on a wooden structure and they're still gagged. I said, suddenly Malcolm McDowell appears in a powdered wig. He shows up and he starts talking to them and he says, "I bid you welcome, O nameless and numbered ones. Tonight we are going to play 31. And then we see two more powdered wigs come out, these two ladies. This is Sister Serpent and Sister Dragon. And Father Murder, who is Malcolm McDowell, he continues speaking. He says, "What is 31, pray tell?" He goes, "Ah, well, 31 is war. And as the old saying goes, war is hell." And then one of the women speaks up, and I think it was Sister Dragon. And she says, "In exactly 120 seconds, we will begin." And then Father Murder goes on and says, "And all you have to do is survive 12 hours inside the walls of our own private little hell. And now for the survival odds as we see fit." He says, "Number one, 50-1. This is Panda. Number two, 500-1, which is Venus. Number three, 100-1, which is Roscoe. Number four, 60-1, which is Levon. And number five, 500-1, which is Charlie." And he goes, "Now, what do you have to do to survive? Fear not. We have some very colorful heads for you tonight. And they're here for one reason and one reason only. To kill you in the most violent way possible. Feast your eyes and behold." And then he yells, "Sick head." And I said, the first time I saw this movie, I didn't have the captions on. I thought he said shithead. I mean, I really did.
Sickhead was really the only part of the movie that Shane liked, because he thought he was funny. He goes, he's a little person, Hispanic Nazi, dressed up like Hitler.
Mm-hmm. I wrote, and I, oh my God, the first time I watched this, I was like, and it was at this point that I started questioning just why the fuck am I watching this movie? Because a little Nazi screaming Spanish comes running out. And it's like, wait, what? But he turns and starts taunting the group in Spanish while Father Murder continues to tell them, "Not be deceived by his diminutive stature. He will not go quietly into that good night." And then he says, 31 has begun. You know, frickin' Sickhead does the Nazi salute. And then we do a transition scene. Now, I love these transition scenes in this movie where the screen freeze frames and either slides. Like it slides to a different direction.
It's very comic booky.
It is. It's very much like a comic book. And we see it, it slides upward, and we see the factory, and then it slides upward again. So we're going deeper into the factory. And then when we open up, we see Venus lying on the floor, bag over her head. She yanks it off and looks around. We see a table leg with a nail in it right next to her. She grabs it, and then the PA cues up, and it says, "Welcome to 31. You now have exactly 12 hours to play." A siren sounds, and she looks around. Then we cut to Panda waking up elsewhere. He pulls a bag off his head, finds a pipe next to him. Then we cut to Levon creeping around, and he's holding a knife, and we hear Sickhead in the distance cackling. Then we cut back to Panda.
That cackling is just so unsettling.
Oh, it really was. And especially because, like, it's echoing all over that place. All you can hear is, like, the drip of water, steam vents, and then him cackling. Mm-hmm. And so we hear, Panda hears Sickhead cackling and howling nearby. And he like, kind of sneaks around like he's going to jump out and smack him. And when he jumps out, Roscoe jumps out on the other side, and they're both about to smack each other, and they stop short. So they regroup, and now they're searching for the others. We cut to Venus searching around, and behind her, we can see Sickhead watching her. And the PA cues up again, and we hear Father Murder say, "The average human is quite resilient. Events that disgust us one moment quickly become infinitely acceptable the next. Sometimes the weak ones have the most fight, or perhaps they're just the luckiest, I don't know. But as we like to say around here, the dirtier you work, the luckier you get." And then we cut to Panda and Roscoe finding a room with noise coming out of it. They get ready to attack whatever's in there. They fling the door open and jump in, and we find Sickhead's lair. It's just a room filled with Nazi flags and symbols. There's a tape of Hitler playing, of him giving his speech. And then we see bodies under sheets. They quickly yank the sheets off to see if it's their friends and find just two dead women. And Roscoe starts, you know, cackling, and he's just like, "Oh my God, I've never been so happy to be wrong in all my life." And it was just like, yeah, but there's still some corpses around you, and you're still in some fucked up shit.
Yeah, but he doesn't know them, so it doesn't matter.
Right, exactly. Right.
They're not his people. He doesn't care.
But, so then we cut to, oh yeah, I'm sorry, we cut to Levon walking down this hall, and we see, like, a gate at the end of the hall. On the other side, there's, like, not at the end of the hall, it's, like, in the middle of the hall. On the other side of the hallway, or the other side of the gate, we see Sickhead wearing a bunny head come walking down the hallway, scraping his knives, like fucking Freddy Krueger.
So creepy.
Oh, it really was. It was like something out of Silent Hill with the whole bunny head thing. But Levon starts taunting him, and he's yelling at him. He's like, "I'm gonna shove this knife straight up your ass." And he goes, "Ooh, I might like that." Like, Sickhead's fucking twisted. As if you didn't already know. But he tells Levon to run along. He said he's gonna find him. You know, he's like, "Go run along now, run away." And he starts walking off cackling. And then we cut to a destroyed bathroom, and we see Charlie hiding in a stall with a baseball bat. And all around her in the stall are these, like, photos of dead people. And, like, that was really disturbing, because it was, like, close-ups of, like, brutalized corpses with, like, someone had scratched out their eyes, like, on the photo. It just, I don't know, that really creeped me out.
Those photos really reminded me of Devil's Rejects.
Yeah.
When Mother Firefly is taunting Wydell.
That's right.
Yeah. And they're the pictures of, like, they kept his corpse around. This is what they did to him. So that totally reminded me of that part.
I feel like this whole movie, in a sense, takes place in that bathroom with those toilets. Like, just the whole design. It's just dripping. It's gross. It's...
Yep.
Yeah.
It's got Hep C.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everyone in this movie needs a tetanus shot, even the aristocrats.
Exactly. Oh, man. So she's in there, and we hear Sickhead yelling nearby. So she kind of, like, she tries to make herself small. Like, she pulls her feet up onto the toilet, and, you know, she's just kind of cowering in the stall. And he's approaching and singing "Trick or Treat."
Oh, trick or treat, you are dead. I will smash your fucking head. And every time he does it, he gets more and more angry. Finally, he's like, "Trick or treat."
It's true. But yeah,
I find myself holding my breath. I know what's going to happen. I've seen the movie more than once, mm-hmm. but still, it's just that. Oh,
well, and that's the thing. I was going to say, he does this very effectively in this scene where you're taking a horror trope that anyone who's watching this movie who has seen some horror movies in the past knows what is coming, but it still is so effectively done that it makes you jump.
Yeah.
That, like, because we all know Sickhead's going to pop his head underneath the stall. Like, it's just, it's telegraphed from a mile away. But it's, there's like, I don't know if it's because he waits a couple beats extra. Because it doesn't happen when you feel like it should happen. There's almost like a moment of like, maybe they're not going to do that. And then he pops out and you're like, oh, fuck. You know, it was really good. But Sickhead pops his head under the stall. He starts like making kissy faces at Charlie. She starts smacking the stall with the baseball bat. And he pulls away laughing. And a few seconds later, you know, we hear someone moving around the bathroom. And then the door bursts open. Charlie goes to swing and it's Levon. So, you know, he gets Charlie's trying to help her, and then Sickhead jumps on Levon's back and starts stabbing the shit out of him, which just looked painful. Like, he was getting him all up in the chest and the neck.
Did we miss the part where, when Levon is taunting him and Sickhead says, numero cuatro always dies first?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I did forget to say that. That was what he said to him before he said, I'm going to stick this knife up your ass. And he goes, oh, I might like that. But yeah, so he did tell him that Forrest is going to die first. He's stabbing the shit out of him. And then, yeah, Charlie fucking whacks Sickhead with the baseball bat. And he goes flying. And so she goes to help Levon. And he's like, is he dead? She goes, I don't know. I think I broke his little fucking neck.
Nope.
And then that's when Sickhead jumps up and starts swinging his knives at her and kind of corrals her backward into the hall. So she's like swinging her bat. He's like poking the knives at her and she keeps backing up. And eventually.
And they're yelling at each other in Spanish the whole time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like, loco de cabeza.
He's like calling her a punta. And she's like, see, see.
She says something like, puta loco de cabeza. But he corrals her backward far enough where he can close a gate between them, and he tells her, he says, now run along. He goes, I'm gonna go and kill number four, and when I'm done, I'm gonna come and kill you nice and slow. And he goes, go run along, number five. And so she freaks out and runs, and then he goes back toward Levon, and then we cut to Levon bleeding out. The PA queues up again and says 10 hours and 43 minutes remaining. Anything can still happen. Sickhead returns. He starts taunting him. They basically start saying fuck you to each other, yelling at each other. Then Levon just gives up and he looks at him and goes, just fucking do it, man. Just fucking do it. And he goes, oh, you're ready to die? And then he roars and he lunges at Levon and we cut to Charlie hiding. So we see she's in like kind of a caged room, like almost like a sports locker.
Oh, and it probably smells like dirty jock strap.
I'm sure it did. It reminded me of the little locker that they threw. Oh my God, why can't I think of her name? In the Faculty. The gothy character in the Faculty. Yeah. they locked her up in the one. But it was very much like that. So Sickhead comes into the room that she's in and begins searching for, eventually sees her in the locker. And runs at it and starts beating on the door. She's bashing it from the other side, trying to get him off. He's trying to open it. She's screaming. We cut to Roscoe and Panda hearing her, and they start running toward her. Sickhead finally gets the door open, goes to stab Charlie, but right behind him, Venus pops up with the table leg with the nail through it, whacks him in the back of the fucking head. Nail goes into his skull. She yanks it out. He falls over and starts convulsing. Which was really disturbing.
Yeah.
I mean, you want him to die, but man, what a way. And Charlie is basically like, fuck this. She grabs his knives and starts stabbing the shit out of him. So once you can see, he like kind of slowly gives in and starts to die. And Venus is like, that's enough, Charlie. That's enough. He's dead. And she goes, fuck it. Where's my bat? And picks up the bat and starts bashing. I said beating a little dead person. Like, Jesus.
I really like this scene because you see something flip on in Charlie.
Yes.
Like, she's so scared and cowering when she's hiding in that bathroom stall. But then once he has her cornered in that hurt locker, we'll just call it, she just, and Venus, you know, hits him in the head, like survival instinct. She's, and through the rest of the movie too, we see that she's really the one that's like, no, fuck this, we are getting out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I really like what a strong leader she becomes, like, during the course of the movie.
I was gonna say like, I feel like these like stories, like the Dangerous Game and that sort of thing, and even like Hostel to a certain extent, I feel like he, and well, I felt like in Devil's Rejects there was a little bit of this too, where the story is kind of designed to be like, well, you have to like buy into this. You know what I mean? Like, you have to, oh, well, the good people, are they really that good? Or you're just going to end up turning into that, which you hate, or that sort of thing.
Right.
And I think that could probably be a way to look at it that I think would turn people off a lot from this. But I took it like you did, where I felt like, this is sort of designed to be like, well, you can like do nothing or be afraid, or, you know, your chances are slim, but you could do something. And I think there is that sort of like, like slobs versus snobs kind of attitude in this movie, where like Doomhead is as cool as, you know, he sounds, and he knows, or he thinks he sounds that cool.
Mm-hmm.
He's still controlled by the system. And even one of the other killers points that out too. And yeah. So I feel like Charlie is one of the only people that, and actually I would say Venus too, to kind of break free of that control, even though, you know, that closing mortality for them all, it traps them. I feel like they're the freest because they, like you said, they do fight back.
Right. I feel like that this also really shines a light on the whole idea of a fight or flight mechanism. You know, like a lot of people think, you know, oh, I would stand there and I'd beat the shit out of them, blah, blah. You know, they feel like they have a strong fight mechanism.
Yeah.
Like Osco, for example, who feels like that. But when the chips are down, he wants to hide. Whereas Charlie, who starts out being afraid, you know, when the again, the chips are down, like when it's your life is on the line, she's like, fuck it, I'm gonna do whatever I have to do to survive. So yeah. I feel like it really highlights how people have that switch that can flip. Either you're gonna run or you're gonna fight. And again, I really feel like, we said this at the top, but I really feel like Sherry Moon Zombie does not get enough credit for her role. Like, I mean, she, and I've, like I said in House of Thousand Corpses, I've enjoyed her in every Rob Zombie movie I've seen. I think, you know, in Lords of Salem, where they were like, oh, she couldn't carry a movie, I thought she did just fine. And in this,
I agree.
In this one, as a main character, like, I fucking loved her. I thought she was great. So, and this, and like you said, this particular moment where you see the switch happen, it's really fucking good. Mm-hmm. But, so now we cut to the group. They're with Levon again. Panda is cradling him as he looks like he's about to die, and he's kind of talking to Panda. He's like gasping for air and all that. And then this, oh, the scene is so disturbing. He goes through a death rattle, and it's really sad, but at the same time, it's so like fucking visceral, you know, like just to see that. Like, because normally when someone dies in a movie, they're like, and they die. This is like a straight up death rattle, and the great thing about that, and why I think it was played to such effect, is on the commentary, Rob Zombie talks about that Levon did not tell Panda and the others, like, he didn't say what he was going to do. You know, he told him, like, he's got his scene ready, and they just had to react to what he was going to do. So he did the whole death rattle, and that look of, like, shock, terror, and, like, sadness on all their faces was real. So it's like, I love it when an actor can do that in a movie, and like, and everyone else can just fucking roll with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really, really good acting. But so I wrote, I was calling the aristocrats, as you said, the powdered heads. Because, you know, we got the whole
the head powdered thing. Wig gang.
Exactly.
What are their names again? I'm sorry. It's like, do they have names?
It's Father Murder, Sister Dragon, and Sister Serpent.
That's right. That's right. That's right. I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries. So we cut back to them discussing the game thus far. And while they're talking, we see the group coming up on what looks to be a forest in the middle of the factory with a huge dining table filled with a feast. And the PA announces, as we slip into our third hour of nonstop 31 action, come and enjoy this exquisite dining. You may want to try the steak and kidney pie, followed by the apple crumble. Mmm, delicious. For one of you, of course, this might be your last supper. Roscoe and Charlie don't trust the food. They're like, no, I'm sure it's poisoned. And Venus tells them that they wouldn't poison them because we're playing their game. They want us to play. And finally, Panda's like, fuck it. He digs in and tells them, he's like, I can feel you judging me. He's like, but don't. He's like, I want to survive this. And he's like, and I suggest you all do the same. And he's basically saying, like, you better eat to get your strength up because we're in this for the long haul. So Roscoe joins in. Charlie still doesn't trust it and kind of sitting there. And they're like, what's going through your head, Charlie? She goes, what's going through my head? We need better fucking weapons is what we need. Like, so she's ready to fucking kill. And then we kind of cut a little time has passed. We've seen them eating for a while. Roscoe, Panda, and Venus are eating and discussing a church group that went missing a year prior and then turned up rotting in some dumpsters. And then Venus realizes, she's like, oh my God, I remember that. She goes, that's going to be us. We're going to be a 5-minute news blip and nothing more. And they're like, no, 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 don't think like that. Like, they're trying to convince her, we're not going to die. Then Charlie notices something under the tablecloth. She pulls away the cloth and yells at them to stop eating, and she yanks the whole thing off, and we see Levon's dead body all sliced up in like a glass table. So they were eating chunks of Levon.
Hey, I got a slogan.
What's that?
Levon. Oh boy. It's what's for dinner.
Oh, that's just wrong. But I loved this transition because we cut to the powderheads cackling with delight and we freeze frame. Then the transition goes upward. We see a photo of Levon in simpler times, like back when he was still alive. And then we continue to roll upward and we unfreeze on Roscoe doubled over and then he starts puking.
I wrote a note on this when he was under the table. That was like quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a little bit like I was initially a little disappointed because like when you watch like The Running Man or something, I think maybe with the editing and everything in this, everything is so quick.
Yeah.
And the transitions, and there's not any sort of establishment of geography.
Yeah.
And that could have been due to time or money, whatever. It doesn't matter. Because I think it's more to be, you know, if I don't think this is his style at all, but I think if he had been born like 30 years later, he would have had like GoPros attached to all of these characters' heads.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's definitely meant to be completely chaotic and isolated with everyone. But I can see that because I remember like watching them, I'm like, oh, that was kind of messy to me, for me at least. And I was like, and I can kind of see like how this movie would be a disappointment because it's more like you're more in the trenches. You're in those disgusting toilets with the characters, not, you know, you don't have like it's not like a huge action set piece whatsoever.
Right. Well, I think because I had the same thought when I first watched this about like, damn, that was fast for them to carve up and cook Levon. And I still think it is pretty fast, especially because of the way the feast looked. But they kept establishing the time. Now, keep in mind, when Levon was dying, they had said that there was still, it was like well over 10 hours to go. when they cut to the feast, they said that it's their third hour. So another hour and a half has passed since Levon has died. Mm-hmm. So they keep telling us the time, which, you know, I think that was the whole reason they did that, was to be like, well, you know, we're going to be cutting a lot from scene to scene. We need to establish that time has passed. So, but I still question, like, so the goons went in, found Levon, they carved the guy up, and they cooked him and put out the sumptuous feast in an hour and a half. That still seems like a like that's, a very quick time frame.
Yeah, that's some improv. Like, right. I don't think they do that for everyone, like the pastor's family.
The food's been cooking all day.
Right.
That'd be great if it was like one of those cooking shows where, you know, they show you prepping, but then the actual meal at the end is, well, this was like pre-made, so it was like somebody else's body, but they just put Levon's body in there. Sorry, I'm thinking about it too hard.
No, that's fine. I like that. Oh, shit.
Let's just call it movie magic.
Yeah, movie got a movie.
Yeah.
Movie got a movie.
So Roscoe pukes, and then the PA cues up again, and we hear him say, "I sincerely hope you enjoyed your protein enriched nourishments." And then they said the first reassessment of the standings are as follows. Number one, 50-1 odds, which again was Panda. Number three at 90-1, which was Roscoe. Number two, 300-1, which is Venus. And last but not least is number five with 400-1. And then we hear circus music playing behind them, and a door begins to open with like red light pouring out, and we hear chainsaws rev up as the PA continues. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, with exactly 9 hours left to play, I give you Psycho Head and his brother, the maniacally mental Schizo Head. And two chainsaw wielding clowns come out and start taunting the group. And now they just creeped me out with their look. Like,
which is modeled, their masks were modeled after Otis and Captain Spaulding.
Right. But their body paint. That was just because they, like, because freaking Psycho Head was wearing a thong tutu and his body was painted up and he had like, it had a big arrow pointing down that said like dick. Then, like, the other guy was wearing overalls and had painted spots and on his chest that said pussy. It's just like, what? Like, I don't like any of this.
You're not supposed to. Mission accomplished.
Right. Freaked me out. So,
come on.
Well,
I thought really it was creative.
They really freaked me out coming up. But they run back into the doorway and they give the group a head start. So now we cut to the group wandering the halls of the complex trying to come up with a plan. The overhead announces that there's 8 hours and 12 minutes left. Venus suggests that they find a room and barricade themselves in and let the timer run out. Roscoe seconds the idea. He likes that. Panda tells them there's no way that they would let us get away with that. Remember, we're playing their game. They would come find us. And he's like, I don't want to have my back to a wall when they come. And they basically, you know, tells them they'd be sitting ducks. So Charlie agrees with Panda, even though Roscoe's like, oh, come on, Charlie, what's your vote? You have a vote, too. He's hoping she's going to side with him. But she's like, I think we should find these sick fucks and kill them. Like, so she wants to hunt them down. And eventually they come up to the vagina door.
Of the wet kitty with a human sex doll inside.
Oh, but the whole, okay, so let's paint the picture. There's a hallway, and on either side of the hallway are painted legs, and at the end of the hall is a doorway with curtains modeled to look like a vagina. Yes, and it says wet kitty above it, which is just fucking creepy. So they go into they go into the vagina door, and you can hear a rather disturbing recording playing. Now, this is where they really creeped me the fuck out, because there's this loop of, I don't know if it was it Psycho Head or one of the two of them were talking, and they're just saying, we're going to fuck your mouth hole. We're going to fuck your pussy hole. We're going to fuck that tiny little brown hole. We're going to fuck your eye holes too. And then it loops.
It's my, like, mom can never listen to this podcast.
Well, as we stayed at the top, explicit language
and spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have her watch the movie first, then she'll be prepared.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. And Christmas.
I told my mom, I'm like, you're never allowed to listen to the podcast. But I mean, that's that scene, that recording is so fucking unsettling, especially when it gets to the next part, because they shut off the recording and then they hear this like soft moaning and they look down and there's what looks to be like someone underneath a blow up doll. And Roscoe goes, it's coming from that fuck doll there. And they pull the blow up doll skin off of the person. And we see this woman bloody and bruised and basically sewn into the mattress with barbed wire, which is going through her skin. This whole sequence just fucked with me. I'm like, this is like nightmare fuel. The idea that this person, we find out that it's Georgina. It's the wife of the pastor. So she's been living this hell for a year. Like, that blew my mind when they reveal who it is. I was like, oh, fuck, that is fucked up. Like, that just, that made these two really fucking scary to me.
So, true confession, I've seen this movie multiple times. When I watched it for the podcast is when it clicked for me. Oh, that it was the pastor's wife, which made it even worse than I already thought that scene was.
Yep. Yeah, because in the beginning, when the pastor, that's what got me, was in the beginning, the pastor says, what have you done with my wife, my beautiful Georgina? And then he says, you know, two little clowns I know took a liking to her. And then you figure, this is a year later, because they establish at the dinner scene, the church group that went missing the previous year. And then, you know, when she says her name's Georgina and she's talking about her husband's going to be looking for her, I was like, oh, fuck, this is disturbing. You know, so anyway, Roscoe's freaking out, you know, thinking that she's with them. And, you know, Venus is trying to help her. She's, you know, she wants to, pardon me, she wants to get, you know, get her out of there. And
that's, yeah, that's another case where, like, I don't know, like that, like you said, there's always that ticking clock, and it's like, so I was thinking about this movie, and I apologize if anybody has anybody in their family currently going through this, but in cancer,
mm-hmm.
and that ticking clock, and that sort of like, you know, I'm probably prescribing too much on it, but I thought about this and the fight to do something, and how freaked out Roscoe gets, but Venus, I mean, she's freaked out. This whole thing is like the worst thing ever committed to celluloid. Like, well, it's not, but you know, it's right. A terrible scene. But she does something. She's, even if it ends, she's doing something, and Roscoe is like just frozen. It's right. Well, at first he's frozen, but I like that he turns, but I also just really like that scene in relation to if this was really happening, it's not like The Running Man. Like, if this was happening, like something like this, the worst, most awful thing would be happening, and what would you do about it? And right. I like that she is the one that she's taking action like Charlie would.
Well, she's also almost like the mother character. You know, like, she clearly was the madam of their group, looking over the new recruits, if you will.
Yeah.
But she definitely seemed to have the mother vibe to the whole group. And she reacted the way a mother would in this situation to you know, a hurt child. You know, she wanted to save them. She wanted to help them. And it was kind of heartbreaking to watch.
Yeah.
But,
100%. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we hear the chainsaws down the hall. So Roscoe starts screaming that she tripped a silent alarm. Panda and Charlie go to run and barricade the door. Panda yanks a pipe off the wall and uses it to kind of like blockade the door. And Charlie goes, do you think it'll hold? And he just goes, no. And he walks away. It's like, oh, shit. And we see Roscoe and Venus trying to free Georgina, but they can't get the wire out of her skin. And she's just begging them to rip it, which is just, ugh, that's even more disturbing. And then suddenly gates drop over the exits, barring them in. Roscoe freaks out, realizing it's a giant cage. Schizohead comes running in from an area they didn't see. Chainsaw revved. Panda and Charlie start fighting him. Psychohead jumps up from underneath some hay bales that were around the room and starts cutting Georgina in half with the chainsaw. Ugh, that was disturbing. And then, to make it even worse, as if that wasn't bad enough, where he just saws her from the crotch up, he looks at Venus and yells, "Now I'm going to need a new fuck bag." It's like, ugh, he's terrifying. But Roscoe gets in front of Venus and, you know, holds up his crowbar and basically says, you know, "You're going to have to go through me if you want to get to her." And I do love this dialogue. He goes, "All that chivalry is worthless, motherfucker, like tits on a boar hog." Then he goes, meet motherfucking dickhead sideburns. And he holds up his chainsaw.
Out of all of the people in this movie, I wanted those two to die the most. I mean, but I was like, those were the guys I was like actively rooting. I'm like, this needs to happen faster for them. Like, they need to just get out of the movie.
Oh yeah. They were vile as hell.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of those, these are those characters you can see when the critics were watching this movie. We're probably just like, oh no, now the movie's done. It's tanked, you know, because it's just, they're so gross. But yeah. Go ahead.
I feel like even like horror people that were hard on it, or people that, you know, kind of knew what they were getting into or signed up for or kickstarted it or whatever. But like, yeah, this is the point where it's like, okay, you know, we've seen this before in Rob Zombie movies, and it's extremely hard to watch, but, you know, there's probably a breaking point for people. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't know, like, for some people it was probably like his first movie, but this is probably one of the ones where they're like, okay, we get it, you know.
There's only two sequences in any Rob Zombie film that, like, really get under my skin to the point of, like, where I'm bothered. The scene in The Devil's Rejects, the motel room scene.
Yeah. I knew you were going to say that.
Whoo, that's hard to watch. Like, I mean, it every single time I've seen it, it's like I'm cringing the entire time. It's just so hard to get through. And then this sequence with Georgina, like, this is really unsettling. And it starts when you hear the tape and it up to where Psychohead kills her. Like, that sequence just really bothers me. But mission accomplished, because I'm sure that's what he was going for.
Right.
Yeah, it just violates, like, everything. And I know... sorry. Yeah, that sums it up.
Yeah, it really does. You're right. Psychohead starts fighting Roscoe, and Panda and Charlie are fighting Schizohead. Now, both Roscoe and Panda respectively get injured in their fights. Like, they both catch the saw. Panda gets, like, sliced a little bit across his chest. Roscoe gets sliced across his arm. Psychohead bites a chunk of Roscoe's ear off. It's all fucked up. Then Venus smacks Psychohead from behind, and Roscoe is able to trip him, and he falls onto his chainsaw. And then Venus jumps on his back and holds him belly down on the saw. Well, he starts, you know, getting ground up, and he's screaming, "I will never die, motherfucker. I will never die." And Schizohead turns and sees his brother getting killed, which is enough of a distraction. So Charlie whacks him upside the head. He falls over. Panda gets his saw. He and Charlie close in on him. He starts begging for his life, telling them he doesn't want to be there. He's trapped just like them. The people in charge make him do this. We're all pawns in their twisted little game. And he goes, "I'm just like you, brother. I'm just like you." And then Panda goes, "Okay, brother." And he revs the saw and cuts his fucking head off.
That was so great.
Yeah. I loved that. I mean, that's one of those cheering moments, because you want these fuckers to die.
I definitely did. Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
I would say, though, he's not wrong. Yeah.
He is and he isn't, because we find out a little later they are hiring these people.
That is by the way, I want to see a sketch or a skit where those aristocrats, like, interview all of these people and how that happens.
Yes. a behind the scenes interview process.
Yeah, I want to know like which ones didn't make the cut. Like, they're like, no, you only have like Hep C. We're not hiring you. Like, I don't know. Like,
you not that anybody regularly. That has
hepatitis. You know what I mean? Like, just like, yeah, you're not like diseased in the mind or anything like that.
Right.
I apologize to anybody with hepatitis. I didn't mean to stress that as.
No. Oh, God. That's fucking funny, though. I would love it if that should have been a DVD feature.
Yeah.
But so they kill them. They take the one saw. Charlie goes to grab the other one, but the chain is busted. So the gates open. They leave the cage. And we cut back to the Powderheads talking about how there's 7 hours and 3 minutes remaining. And it's time to recalculate the odds and place their bets. So we cut to Charlie cleaning up Roscoe and applying a tourniquet. And I love this. She goes, what's that thing you say to the kids coming out of the spook house in tears? And he goes, why? She goes, just tell me. He goes, crying's for pussy, so go grow a pair, you big baby. She goes, yeah, get ready to grow a pair, you big baby. And she yanks the tourniquet tight. Like, just the look on his face. But then the PA cues up again and says, attention, attention. Number one, odds, 40 to 1. Number two, odds, 300 to 1. Number three, 1 million to 1. And Roscoe just goes, ah, fuck. And then number five odds, 300 to 1. And they say, sex and death are on their way. And then we cut to Deathhead and Sexhead walking through the complex, singing in German.
She's skipping and like doing a little dance around him. And he's like in this adult diaper tutu thing.
Yeah. I'm just in my head. I was like, it's the Nihilist and Tommy Pickles. Like, I just... You know. It's the fucking Nihilist from The Big Lebowski and Tommy Pickles. It's so weird. Oh, but
that's interesting. That's German. Well, actually, the Sickhead wasn't German. He just liked Hitler.
But, yeah.
He was a Spaniard in love with Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
But, so we see them kind of skipping along, coming in. And then the group hears them coming and makes a plan of attack. Panda says, you know, he wants the girls to make some noise, get his attention, and he'll run up behind him and clock him in the back of the head. And he goes, we only got one shot, so we got to make this count. So we see Deathhead coming down the hall yelling for them. And Venus and Charlie pop out and distract him as planned. Panda sneaks up, and then suddenly Sexhead calls out from behind him, warning Deathhead about Panda. He spins around and starts fighting him. So he beats the shit out of Panda with the spiked bat. And Venus and Charlie come running out with the chainsaw, stopping him from killing Panda. And then we cut to Roscoe kind of limping along in this strobe-lit corridor. And this part genuinely creeps me out. Because, like, her eyes in the strobe lights are just creepy.
With the makeup and that blonde wig with, like, the big... She looks like a Cupid doll.
Yes. Oh, it's so fucking eerie. But so we see Sexhead sneaking up behind him, and she just goes, hi there, and he turns, and she whacks him in the face with a chain. And then we see the group circling Death and trying to fight him, and then back up to Sexhead and Roscoe, and she refers to him as the Great White Hunter again, and he realizes who she is. And that, you know, he kind of, like, there's that dawning realization of, like, oh, fuck, I gave her all the information she needed. And he tells her, she says... She goes, don't feel bad. It's always someone's fault. And then she starts swinging the chain around again. And then we get a little montage of the two groups fighting, of Roscoe and Sexhead kind of fighting with each other, and the other group fighting Deathhead. And then Deathhead gets the upper hand and starts hitting Panda in the gut with the spike bat. Then we cut to Sexhead jumping on Roscoe and stabbing the shit out of him. And then Charlie comes up behind her, pulls her off of Roscoe, and you know, Roscoe's fucked up at this point. Like, he was already hurt, but now he's all fucked up. And we see Venus come at Deathhead with the chainsaw, but it stalls out on her, and he starts coming at her with the bat, ready to kill her. And in the background, we see Panda slowly bleeding out. Then we hear Charlie starts yelling down the hall, and she's walking up, holding a knife to Sexhead's throat, and he's like, Deathhead starts begging her not to hurt her. And Venus grabs the spike bat, whacks Deathhead in the back of the legs, dropping him to his knees. He begs again for Sexhead's life, saying, kill me, kill me. And in the background, we see Panda bleed out and die, which is really fucking sad. then Charlie looks to, or Venus looks to Charlie, and Charlie's telling him to finish it. And she's like, she's shaking her head, like she doesn't want to do it. And she yells at her to finish it. So she cracks him upside the back, knocks him to the floor, and then smashes his head. Then she looks at her sex head screaming, and Venus looks at Charlie and says, what do we want to do with her? And Charlie just coldly slits sex head's throat, like, fuck you, you're gone.
She is full on in survival mode.
Yep. And that was brutal, but you know what?
Deserved.
Hey, yeah, she deserved it. So now we cut back to the Powderheads talking.
I feel like, yeah, you're right, full on survival mode. But I always, when watching this type of like manhunt things, I can't help but look at like the bad guys or whoever's like in control of it. And do you think like when they, you mentioned a line that one of them said, like about, oh, they're always surprised at how low you can go. Mm-hmm. And I feel obviously they're having this contest because they're like, well, you know, this is truly being alive is like taking the life of another. It's, you know, it's like the Ice-T movie Surviving the Game or something. But I don't know if the movie is convinced of that argument. I feel like it's more like a survival. It's a hopeful thing. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm wrestling with this one out loud.
No, that's cool. I honestly got the vibe that it's the part I'm getting with the aristocrats thing is that I feel like, and I'm sure there's more to it than just this surface level, but I feel like it's the whole idea of being so powerful you can buy and sell people. And like they have like human life to them has no real value. You know, it's all about
Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's that kind of a thing. And like it reminded me a lot of there's a scene, and I might have said this before on the show, I can't remember, but the Hostel movies. I like part one, I like part three, I hate part two. The reason I hate part two is it kind of revels in this idea of people like life having no value. Because there's this sequence where we see all of these rich people with their families at their job, you know, out on a yacht, all this difference is just like people living their lives, and they're bidding on people to kill. And that really bothered me when I saw it. And there's a scene very similar to that at the end of this movie that gets on, like, just gives me the heebie-jeebies thinking about it. But I think that there's definitely a point of like too much power, like the whole, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely, that whole idea. And I feel like maybe there was something to be said about that with the whole aristocrats idea. I'm probably all over the place at this point, but hopefully you guys are following what I'm laying down.
It is actually, I think that's why I liked Hostel 2 out of all of them the most.
I can't stand that one. It drives me crazy. But yeah, so we see them discussing their plan, and they're suggesting new heads to bring into the game. And the one says Bash Head, and they say like, no, he can't finish the job. And they say Rage Head, and he goes, too erratic. And then eventually they land, and there's only one of them that would be compelling and would be compelling enough choice, but also finish the job, and they settle on Doom Head. Now, during this discussion, there is a montage of Doomhead butt-fucking Ginger Lynn while watching Nosferatu. I mean, yeah, it's just
who
like...
Who hasn't done that while watching Nosferatu?
I haven't.
Yeah, I can't join you on that one.
And our guest is silent.
So he's the one that has.
Oh, God. Thank you. No. All right, I'm going. Bye.
I would say Eric is now second guessing ever joining us again.
One of those things where like you're joking with people, and I like words just failed me because I was like remembering that scene. I'm like, oh yeah, this is another one of those scenes where it's like, okay, this has gone on for about 5 minutes too long. But.
Yep. So the phone rings, you know, he stops and answers it. She gets all upset. And you only get his side of the conversation, but he says, I wasn't planning on working this year. And he goes, double. Okay, yeah, you got it. So they double his previous fee. And he basically sends Ginger on her way. And then we cut back to Murder World, and we hear California Dreamin' playing over the PA, and the group are all hiding, like, underneath this platform. And they just look fucked up. Like, they're all bloody and bruised and half-dead looking. And then we transition, like, the screen goes down, and we transition into Doomhead coming down an elevator with a bunch of the goons. And he asks them, what am I working with? And they say 4 hours and 37 minutes. And he goes, shit, I could kill your whole family in that amount of time. He smiles, enters his dressing room. And I fucking love this scene. This is one of my favorite scenes in the movie. He turns on classical music and begins painting his face. And he stares at himself in the mirror. And there's like these quick cuts of like him smiling and then looking dead serious. And he starts saying to himself, I'm not crazy, I'm in control. I'm not crazy, I'm in control. And he keeps repeating it. And then he starts yelling it at himself and then goes like, fuck! And he keeps going on and on and like getting more and more revved up. And then he starts fucking punching himself in the face. And it's like, there's like 17 punches. Like he just keeps on punching himself. And then he stops. Like, and you're seeing this all from the back. So you're just seeing his head recoil every time he hits. And it sounds like someone punching a fucking melon. It's just... it was such a great scene. But he stops, pulls back his hair, and then we cut to outside. He walks out of the dressing room, kind of very much looking like Nosferatu, and I know that's what they kind of based his look on. But he has the coat and the little, what is that, an ascot? But
shirt on.
Yeah, but there's just blood pouring down his white face from his nose all over his lips. And he spits out this big gob of blood, and he looks at the guards and says, gentlemen, take the rest of the night off. I'll handle it from here. Murder school, well, it's now in session. And then, I fucking love his character. I love Doomhead so much. But we cut to Venus sleeping. And suddenly Schizohead grabs her by the mouth and wakes her up. She looks terrified. And then Schizohead goes, oh, you didn't think cutting my head off would stop me, did you? I got that sewn back on pronto, like, and I'm feeling groovy. And then she looks over and she sees Psychohead coming in with a very clearly dead Charlie that he's puppeteering. And he starts telling some rather disgusting jokes. I'm not going to repeat this joke. I'm going to save our audience.
But thank you.
It's a really foul joke.
I want to hear it.
No. You can rewind.
I feel like this part, I know we were talking about the toilets and the Nosferatu scene and stuff, but like, this part was truly like the only part I think was almost like filler or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did you guys feel that way?
Well, yeah. And I think it's been a while since I watched the commentary. Like it's been at least a couple of months. I feel like he actually mentioned something like that on the commentary where he needed a little bit more. He needed a little bit more to like flesh out the movie some because after the cuts. And I feel like this was, he said something along the lines of this was filmed afterward. I could be wrong, but this wasn't originally scripted. It was just kind of added on, you know, during the process of making the movie. It might have been something along the lines that he wanted more of the two clowns. I can't remember, but I know it wasn't originally planned. But yeah, so he tells the one joke, which is super foul. And then Schizohead's giggling and goes, tell another one. And he goes, okay. What's the difference between an onion and a whore? And friggin' Schizohead goes, oh, I know. Let me finish. And he goes, oh, okay, you go ahead. And he looks down at Venus and says, the difference between an onion and a whore is I cry when I cut onions. And he pulls back a knife, plunges it into her chest, and she wakes up. So now she finds herself leaning against Roscoe. They're both kind of hidden. And Roscoe looks like he's got both feet in the grave. Like he looks like he's on his way out. And she asks him where Charlie is. He tells her she went to look around and see what she can find. And she flips out on him for letting her go off alone. He's like I could have stopped her. And she runs off looking for Charlie. And he tries to follow. Like, he's limping along. Now, we see Doomhead prowling the halls. And then cut back to the Powderhead gang. The Powderwig gang, that you call it. discussing the protocol should one of them survive. And Father Murder assures them that Doomhead will close the deal and it's time to place their bets. Sister Serpent, I believe it was, I might be getting this wrong, but one of them bows out. She said, you know, I'm done. and he taunts her. He's like, oh, I can understand that. He goes, something along the lines of, like, it's hard to play with the big boys. And Sister Dragon doubles his bet. So it's like, oh, okay, well, she ain't fucking around. So we cut back to Venus searching for Charlie. And while she's walking down this little, like, through this little corridor, a door swings shut behind her. She turns, tries to get out. Doomhead comes up behind her and stabs her in the back. She turns to face him. He slams her head against the wall. And oh, this part is so fucking gross. Again, I apologize to our listeners, but he forces his fingers up under her nose and tells her to sniff. And then he says, I didn't yank my crusty old dong out of some whore's asshole for a quickie wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. I came to get down and dirty. It's like, fuck. So he kisses her. She begs him to let the others live, and he starts yelling at her. He goes, what is it about me that gives you the impression that I would spare them? Because if that's the case, I really got to work on my person-to-person demeanor. And then he starts stabbing her again. And he says, unfortunately, those fools and idiots gave you the most worthless feeling, and that feeling is hope. The unicorn alive, shitting the magic rainbow, it's but an illusion. Life is nothing but a stinking, filthy boneyard of dead and rotting tramps. And then he slides the knife up, gutting her. And we cut to Roscoe and Charlie looking for Venus. The PA cues up again. And we hear, they say, attention, attention. 3 hours and 4 minutes remaining. Oh, how time flies. And this part, we see they come up upon Roscoe and Charlie come up upon Venus pinned to a giant wooden axe. She's been all sliced up. And then Doomhead is kind of standing above them on like a little platform, and he starts clapping to get their attention. And he gives more Doomhead style speech. I didn't write it all down, but he basically tells them, I'll give you a few moments with your fallen comrade. And he goes, oh, and by the way, the doors to the grounds are now officially open. Feel free to walk the grounds. So Roscoe, we cut to kind of like a montage scene of Roscoe and Charlie trying to find their way across the complex and eventually come to a dead end. Roscoe freaks out, but notices a hatch and says, that's got to be it. That's got to be the way out. So he opens the hatch, tells Charlie to get in. You know, it's like a pipe. And he tells her he can't follow her, and she's freaking out. We see Doomhead starts slowly approaching, and he's like, get the fuck in there, go, what are you doing? He's doing that thing he was doing at the beginning, like, get the fuck, go. He shoves her in the hatch and slams the door shut behind her, and he turns to face Doomhead, and he goes, are you gonna fuck me or are you gonna fight me? And then Doomhead runs at him with his switchblades and stabs the shit out of him, and then starts stomping on him until he's dead. So, pretty brutal murder. But then we cut to Charlie in the tunnel. She climbs out into, like, kind of a larger, what the hell was that? It was a larger tunnel, but it was like you could drive a car through it.
It was where you went to get to Pennywise.
Ah, it was...
yeah, pretty much.
It was... Oh, what did they call it? Was it the Barrows?
I don't remember.
I can't remember what they called it. The Barons? I think it was the Barons. But anyway, she falls out into like this bigger tunnel, and we see a light at the end of it. So she slowly staggers her way down there out into the daylight, looks at the sunlight, and just starts screaming. Like, you can tell she's kind of cracked at this point. Like, she's made it through hell. And she staggers down the road and finds a house, goes inside the house, and she hears music playing. So she kind of steals herself for another fight and is creeping around the corner holding her baseball bat. She turns and we see the puppet set up from Lucky Leo's, and she drops her bat almost like she's realizing that they've been set up from the start. And then Doomhead pops up behind her and says, number 5. And she turns and he punches her fucking hard in the face, like hard enough to split her skin because she's bleeding from the head when she hits the ground.
Yeah.
And then he goes and waxes on and on about how important it is to savor and celebrate the great accomplishments in life and blah, blah, blah. Takes out a cigar and lights it. And then he turns to her and goes, smoke in times of rest is a great companion to the solitary soldier. Do you know who said that? He pauses and goes, do you know who said that? And she looks at him and starts laughing and goes, do you think I really give a fuck? I love that.
That scene, that's why I like that movie. I feel like that line directly counters like that Nietzsche quote at the beginning and all of Doomhead's like bullshit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and what this whole thing like lives and dies on. And she just kind of laughs at it and in the face of like complete like destruction. I thought that was, it was so welcome. I feel like and not seen in a lot of other of Rob Zombie's work.
Right. I loved it. I thought that was fantastic. And it is funny because like he does wax on constantly every single time we see him. Like I said, I wanted to write down everything the guy said because it's just this fucking insane ranting of a madman.
I know. He feels like, sorry.
Oh no, go ahead.
He feels really weird, and he is like cool. Like Rob Zombie really like puts, you know, pulls out the brakes nonstop for him and just like you did for like the Devil's Rejects characters. But like at the same time, he feels like when you read in the news, like when someone snaps one of these guys, it's always a guy. Mm-hmm. It seems like, not to politicize it in any way, but like, it seems like it's always a guy. And it always seems like somebody who thought like they were going to get their name somewhere or be remembered or do some greater good.
They thought they were special.
Yeah. And so like, I don't think like fame or notoriety matters to somebody like Doomhead, but just in the act, he thinks that he's special. Yeah. I mean, I know he's a complete sociopath. So like logic has probably jumped out of the plane and fallen without a parachute, but I feel like he, you know, revels in it. Well, he does. He gets mad.
He kind of says in the beginning, though, he says, you know, they call me Doomhead. I don't call myself that, but, you know, that's what they call me.
Right. And so. I think it's also a good example is when he's preparing himself, when he's going on and on saying, I'm not crazy. I'm in control. I'm not crazy. I'm in control. It's like,
yeah.
He knows something is wrong, but at the same time, he has convinced himself that he has it all under control, you know, that he is the powerful force, you know? So, but again, I feel like if they ever did a horror version of the Joker, this would be it.
That's what Shane said about him. Cause I always ask him, do you want to watch the movie with me? And he goes, what are you watching this week? Oh yes. Murder porn. He goes, there was the little Hispanic Nazi and the guy who would make a good Joker. That's about it.
Yep.
Yeah, you guys are right. Yeah, he totally would.
I mean, just picture if they did like a more horrific, like a horrific version of the Joker, like where we see him murdering people and not doing these grand schemes of bombs on boats and whatnot. Like, I feel like that he would be it. Like, this is what the Joker would be if he was a horror character.
I feel the last Joker movie was almost like aping on Rob Zombie's whole au revoir. Like, you know,
yeah.
Like grittiness and everything.
Oh, absolutely. Great fucking movie, though. But yeah, so she goes, she does the whole, do you really think I give a fuck? And then he goes on, he says, it was everyone's favorite revolutionary Marxist, Che Guevara. Goes, except I think he smoked a pipe. I always thought I'd look rather pretentious with a pipe. And then he tells her to look into the eyes of a true champion. And he starts to repeat himself, you know, over and over telling her to look into the eyes of a true champion as he wraps his hands around her throat and begins to choke her. And right before she looks like she's going to pass out, he lets go and lets her sputter and gasp for breath. And he starts like tapping her going, it's okay. It's okay. Catch your breath. Catch your breath. And, he pulls out his two switchblades, and this scene, this is fucking clever, but he goes, well, 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 shall we do it Whitechapel style then? And he runs a bloody finger under her eye and says, bloody red tears, my dear Mary Kelly, bloody red tears. Now, this is a clever reference because obviously Whitechapel is referencing Jack the Ripper, but Mary Kelly was Jack the Ripper's fifth murder victim. She's number five. And they only refer to her as number five because remember, they're the nameless and numbered ones. So I was like, that was a little clever reference there. But then he says, I do have to say I respect you, but it's time to die. And suddenly there's the PA system cues up. We hear a chime and they say, weapons down, weapons down. And he flips out. He's yelling, motherfucker. He's freaking. And we hear 31 has come to an end. And he looks at her. He goes, you lucky fucking dirty little cunt. And then he gets up and walks away. And Charlie's just like panting and freaking out. And then it was like, as soon as he walks away, it's like you can see that adrenaline rush dropped and she just collapses to the floor. Then we see the Powderheads talking. And they're like, it seems the unthinkable has happened. We have a winner. What exactly will you do with her? And Father Murder goes, I'm going to have to get back to you on that one. Thank you for another exciting year of 31. And this is the part I was talking about that kind of disturbed me. We see them changing out of their powdered headgear or powdered wig gear into normal clothes. And it's like they're fucking demons hiding among regular people. That just freaks me out, the thought of that, that there could be something so sadistic hiding behind the face of a normal person. This is why I don't do well with like serial killer horror and like true crime stuff, because it really freaks me out. But we cut back to Charlie staggering down the road, covered in blood, in a complete daze. And oh, this fucking ending. Behind her, we see a van approaching. We cue Aerosmith's Dream On. The van stops, Doomhead gets out, and slowly begins following her. She eventually stops, turns to face him, and she's looking at him. He's just staring at her. She balls up her fists. He looks down at it, smiles when he sees her do that. He pulls out a switchblade, smiles this sadistic grin where he's just drooling. The music keys up louder. We get a close-up on his face. Close up on Charlie's bloody and bruised face with the sunlight beating down. And then we cut to home movies of the entire group during simpler times as the music continues to play, the credits roll, the end. Fucking intense movie.
Yeah. Like I said, it does the only part that you're not on edge is from when we meet our friends up until right before they get abducted.
Yeah.
But from the prologue and then the whole rest of the movie, it's just tension and on the edge of your seat.
Yeah. It's like I got goosebumps just describing that end sequence, thinking about it again. Like when I first saw this and I was going, there's not much time left in the movie. Where are they going with this? And that fucking end, like when it cut, it did the smash cut from Charlie facing off against Doomhead to the home video of like the group of carnival folk kind of dancing happily. It left me kind of gasping. Like it was so intense, and it mirrored two of my favorite endings in horror movie history. I always said that the two best movies as far as their ending goes is the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre and the original Hills Have Eyes. And the reason being, in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, when, what was her name? Oh, why can't I think of the girl's name? Was it Mary?
I don't remember.
The girl who survives.
What was it? Was it Mary?
I'm totally off the mark. It's been a while since I watched it, but.
And we call ourselves horror fans.
I know, right? I'm like,
I'm going to consult the bones. Don't worry. Thank you. Continue.
But when she gets away, there's this moment, like she gets in the pickup truck and they escape, and Leatherface does his signature little twirly dance with the chainsaw. There's a close up on her eyes and she didn't escape. She escaped, but she didn't escape. You see that she has gone completely insane. And she's like just laughing and cackling. We get that real close up on her eyes. And then the movie fucking just ends. And it's like you're brought right to the brink. And then they just stop it. Like there's no real resolution. You're just like, fuck. And you're left gasping. It's Sally. So Sally.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Sally.
I was gonna say Sherry. Hardison? But it was Sally.
Or what was her last name? Did it say?
No. Just that she was played by Marilyn Burns, who is dead now.
That's where I'm getting the Mary from. Okay. I was like, I knew there was an M name.
Eminem.
But it's so fucking intense. And then the same thing with The Hills Have Eyes, where, you know, the father's trying to get his baby back and he's fighting with the fucking mutant hillbilly. And they're fighting back and forth with the knife. And then he gets the knife from him and he starts like stabbing down. And he's just like, there's spittle and blood. and he's freaking out. Like, this guy has been pushed to his limit. And then the screen freeze frames and the credits roll over top of it. And you're just left with that, like, holy shit type of, like, there's no resolution. It doesn't bring you back down. It brings you as high as it can go. And then it just leaves you there. And I feel like this did that really well, where it's like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? And then boom, fucking credits. I just, oh, I love it. It ends so good. But yeah, so that was 31.
I like that ending a lot as well. I mean, it's ambiguous, but I thought it ended where it should have, and I like that shot, that showdown, that standoff.
And she still has her fist balled. She's still ready for a fight.
Right, and that's,
even on the brink of death.
Yeah, that's what I like about it.
And little bit of trivia real quick is apparently it was only shot in 20 days. Like, so it was a pretty quick shoot. The home video montage footage, like of the carnival workers at the end and like the traveling along the road, that was all shot on Rob Zombie's phone. Like, so he just recorded it on his phone. This was edited twice before the MPAA would give it an R rating. The first two submissions came back as an NC-17. So that was pretty... It makes me wonder what else was in there that was cut out, you know? Because this was pretty rough to begin with.
Probably them preparing the meat, the meal.
Yeah.
The cooking show episode. Segment.
Yeah. This is not Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart.
No. But yeah, they said that the reason he set this movie on Halloween was because he read a statistic that stated that more people go missing on Halloween in the United States than any other day, and thought it would make for an interesting premise to a film. So like you said at the start, like, he had had this idea brewing for a while in his head, but setting it on Halloween and having it surround like some kind of Halloween tradition came about after he read that statistic. And then last but not least, Richard Brake's performance at the beginning, the opening monologue, he barely blinks his eyes. It's a single shot close-up. The first 40, he goes 45 seconds before he blinks, and then he doesn't blink again for 61 seconds. So it's like, that just adds to the psychotic feel of that scene, especially with how wide his eyes are during that scene. Mm-hmm. It's like, fuck, dude. Like, it's some intense shit. But anybody want to add anything to the end of this before we wrap things up? Like, anything else to say about 31?
Yeah, if you like Rob Zombie movies, I say watch it. If you like horror, watch it. If you like murder porn, watch it. If you don't like murder porn, don't watch it.
See, and you know, the funny thing is, I never, like, I get it, because I've heard more than a few people refer to this as murder porn. And in my head, it doesn't qualify as murder porn, because I feel like murder porn, the victims don't have a fighting chance. I feel like murder porn is more along the lines of, like, Hostel and Saw, where it's like, you're already trapped, you're already in this thing, and you're going to die, and we're just going to film it. Whereas this, they're all given weapons, they have a chance to fight back. It's like, yeah, they're trapped in a complex, but, you know, they have a chance to survive.
I will rush to that defense also. Like, I think it's just horror. I think it's just a horror movie. And it's just awful and disgusting, and it's not... Like, so... And like Silence of the Lambs and every, you know, FBI profiler TV show, they've probably done this plot in some way or shape or form, but they'll have like a serial killer that has murdered like 10 families, mm-hmm. but it's all how you frame it. And when you get down into the nitty gritty, which is you're going to watch a horror movie, and I'm not saying horror movies can't be fun, they can't be like a Friday the 13th kind of romp or whatever, but like,
right,
you know, I don't know, like I just feel like if you were looking at this poster, you would not have any sort of misconception about like what this is gonna happen, you know,
right,
how
depraved it's gonna be. But it does go dark places, but I do saying adding porn to anything you want to dismiss quickly. It's like a fucking pet peeve of mine. Like, I get so bad at, like, oh, I don't want to watch that. It has it's Muppet porn. There's too many Muppets in Muppet Takes Manhattan. Like, I'm like, I just, my brain, like, explodes. Like, I guess if someone was, like, pushing something on you, like, why don't you listen to this new record? It's great. It's great. And you're like, no, I really don't like that. Or yeah, I'll get around to it. But someone keeps pressing it. And you're like, okay, it's, I don't know, it's the Police porn or something. Like, I don't want to listen to Sting. But when people just say that right off the bat, when you make a suggestion,
right?
Like, oh, I'm not interested in that. That's mystery porn. I don't like mysteries. I'm like, oh. It's just, it's like what the internet has done to us. And it's,
right. So,
I'm sorry. I don't know who said that. So I'm probably insulting.
That's fucking hilarious.
But I don't mean to. I just, yeah. It's a horror movie. It's a
my husband is the one who said that.
Okay, don't.
No. I'm not offended. And no, he. So here's a funny thing. So we are both working from home now because of COVID, and he would listen to the podcast every week, like driving to and from work. Now that we're home, he hasn't listened. I mean, he started listening to Idle Hands, which is when he told me, you do realize that your podcast is longer than the actual movie for that episode. But he won't listen to them at home. Like, if he's, you know, doing whatever Shane things he does, like playing video games or what have you, because it's weird to him to listen to the podcast with me in the house.
I can to a degree understand that, only because, I might have said this before on the show, but when I'm editing the podcast, I have to, you know, obviously I have to go back and listen to the entire thing. And anytime like Jess or Caleb are around, I feel silly listening to myself in front of other people. Like, I don't understand why. So I'm always pausing it. And they're like, you know, because Jess will listen. She's like, well, I'm going to listen to it anyway. And I'm like, I know. I feel silly.
So. No, and I totally get that. But he called it murder porn after we saw it, but also horror movies, they're really not his thing. When we started dating, and I'm pretty sure I've said this on the show before, but when we were early in our romance, we would each like pick like a movie series to watch. So he's like, let's watch Back to the Future movies. And I'm like, we're going to watch Hostel.
Okay, so yeah, I apologize.
Don't apologize.
He's totally justified in calling that because he's probably like enough horror and stuff like that. So
yeah,
but
but he's a good sport. He puts up with me, and especially with it being October, he's been really great about like letting me just have the TV in the living room to do like watching Halloween things. So.
I do want to comment the idea of Muppet porn that first of all, that cracked me up. But the second thing that went through my head was, isn't that Meet the Feebles? Cause aren't there Muppets that fuck in that movie?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Bunny's got the big one.
Yes. Oh Lord. But so we should probably start wrapping this up. But, so for those of us that aren't following us yet on social media, we are the Boogeyman's Closet on both Facebook and Instagram. Maurice, you are in charge of our Twitter. What is that, sir?
At Boogeyman's The.
Thank you very much. As mentioned at the start of this, I will be posting Doomhead's little speech. So, you know, like I said, if you're not on Facebook, check us out for that. Or just, you know, watch the movie. But another reason you should be following us is because we are still continuing our giveaways every month. I actually just received another massive donation. So, guys, seriously, you guys have made this so much cooler than I ever hoped it to be. We started this off, you know, me, Susie, and Reese figuring like, oh, you know what, we'll give away a movie or some artwork or, you know, just a cool little thing every month. And my God, we announced it and people just came out in droves. Everyone loved this idea of trying to make 2020 a little bit better. We have been given so many cool donations by fans and friends of the show. I just can't thank you guys enough. Like, I have enough stuff now that we're still going to be doing some giveaways in 2021. I don't know in what capacity, if it will still continue monthly. It very well might with the amount of stuff I just received. But the prize packages might not be as huge in 2021, but we have enough literally to do the entire year. So, I mean, guys, you're all friggin' awesome. I can't thank you enough. And get on our social media, because we still have several really big giveaways coming up. I mean, November's is going to be good, and then we got two for Christmas. So, you know, definitely get on that. And you know, I don't care if people have already won one. Feel free to join in on the next one. There's plenty to go around. So, again, thank you to everyone who has donated. Thank you to everyone who's participated. And let's keep on having fun with this. One other thing I want to mention, we do want to start doing weekly shout-outs to artists and friends of ours and people who are fans of the show that might do a, you know, a podcast or have some kind of you know, art website, or are, you know, have a good Etsy shop, or are musicians, what have you. So our first spotlight is going to go to our friend Matt LeMay, who joined us for Cabin in the Woods, and who did an amazing Boogeyman's Closet drawing. We posted it up on our social media. It's fucking gorgeous. Like, I seriously want a t-shirt of it. But his Instagram is where he posts all of his artwork. It's M_A_LeMay, which is LEMAY. We'll post a link on both Instagram and on Facebook when this episode comes out. Check him out. Fantastic artist. He's been doing Drawloween in Inktober. Tons of good stuff. Like, he's really been knocking it out of the park. So definitely check him out, guys. And next week we will have another spotlight artist. So anything left to add, guys?
Nope.
Nope.
Alrighty. Nope. Well, thank you again, Eric, for joining us. You are always welcome back. I love having both you and Dawn have been great assets to the show. So feel free to join us when you see a movie you want.
Absolutely. It's a lot of fun. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
And so as always, guys, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
Peace.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.